This is Stephen Strang. I want to introduce my listeners to Charisma Magazine if you don't already get it. Or if you do get it, you could respond to this special offer and we will continue your subscription into the future. The offer is to give you both of my books on Donald Trump, God and Donald Trump, and the new one, Trump Aftershock. These are a value of just less than $50, plus 2 years of Charisma, which costs around $40, and you can get the whole thing for only $39. Now, let me repeat. You get both of my best-selling books and 2 years of Charisma for only $39, and all you have to do is go to this site, trumpbooks.charismamag.com. I hope that you'll take advantage of it because it's a good offer and it's my way to try to connect you with Charisma and also get more copies of my book out there. Thank you for listening to The Strang Report, and here's my episode.
Welcome to The Strang Report with Steve Strang on the Charisma Podcast Network. This episode was produced to discuss and address issues within our nation and around the world from a Christian worldview.
I've been covering the charismatic and Pentecostal community for more than four decades. I grew up in it. I know it. I know that it was started in the holiness movement, and I remember years ago that we used to hear a lot of sermons about holiness. Now, times have changed and attitudes have changed, but unfortunately, we don't hear people talking about holiness anymore. Hello, everyone. This is Stephen Strang, and welcome to The Strang Report. And as you know, I cover a wide variety of subjects on my podcast and in my newsletter and also on our website and in our books. We publish, of course, many books and many magazines. And we have touched on this before, but rarely have we dealt with such a hard, tough love word about charismatics and Pentecostals as we do today with my interview with historian David Barton. I was actually interviewing him for a book that I'm working on, and we started talking about this because we're talking about sort of left-leaning evangelicals and Christians that are becoming more and more liberal theologically. And, you know, I know that Pentecostals and Charismatics don't tend to change their theology. You know, it's not like at the denominational annual meetings there are resolutions to allow ministers to marry same-sex couples or anything like that. But there's different things that are problems. There's things that are overlooked or things that are not emphasized or things that are emphasized wrong. And you're going to want to hear this podcast with David Barton, which I believe is very important. And I believe that after you hear it, you're going to want to share it with others because the Spirit-filled church that a lot of times kind of prides ourselves with being more spiritual than other people really needs to consider what David Barton has to say. In my career, I've focused mostly on Pentecostals, Charismatics, and what we call charismatic-friendly evangelicals. And a number of years ago, you'll remember there was a big controversy in Christianity Today and other circles about the inerrancy of the Bible. This would have been maybe in the late 80s or 90s, and one of the editors at Christianity Today asked me what charismatics thought about inerrancy of the Bible. Was it a big controversy? And a little bit tongue-in-cheek, I answered this way. I said, no, there's no controversy, because if you don't believe in the inerrancy of the Bible, they consider you backslidden and you're really not part of the group. And there was at least some truth in what I said. I'm just curious that in these statistics, and I realize that, you know, it would be a generalization, but do you find those same statistics among Pentecostals and Charismatics? Because at least on the surface, in what is said, and maybe it's a form of political correctness in Christian circles, almost no one would articulate the general view. But under the surface and what, you know, their actions and so forth, it may be a much bigger problem than I'm perceiving. And I want you to help me to understand that. And then maybe to also just to give me some advice. I mean, I'm spending my life trying to change some of these things. And a lot of times we feel like we're banging our head against the wall. I mean, the reason I wanted to publish U-Turn was because I thought that was so important. And I'm speaking a little bit in hyperbole, but I mean, we could barely give the books away. It was like people didn't want to know about this.
And that's what we find right now. As a matter of fact, my son was a graduate of SAGU. So there's an Assembly of God college right there. He's part of a group of 4,500 millennial pastors of the same background philosophy. And in the 2016 election, he asked them, did any of you preach about marriage, preach about life, abortion? They said, absolutely not. That's not to be covered in the church. And so that's from the charismatic Pentecostal background. What we find within that framework, let me see if I can set this up. What we find in that group and the thinking, when we asked, again, going back to theologically conservative pastors, Bible-believing pastors, when we asked them, okay, you guys, Bible-believing, how do you know whether your church is successful or not? The top five answers we get from those evangelical pastors, theologically conservative pastors, not a single one comes out of the Bible. Now, the problem is you get what you measure. And if you look for measurements, you're going to do things to hit those measurements. And here's an example. The top five things they said on how we measure whether our church is successful is the size of the offerings, the number of people that attend church, the number of staff meetings, the number of programs we offer, and the square footage we have. Well, if your number one issue is offerings, you're not going to say anything that will jeopardize offerings, which means you're not going to say a whole lot of stuff. And you're not going to do anything that will jeopardize attendance. And so that's why they will not talk about these things. So, you know, growing up in that background, that used to be called holiness. And we're not finding holiness taught anymore. We're not finding people confronting the lifestyle, saying this is morally right, morally wrong. Pastors are not doing that. We're not finding them. Not only are they not hitting the holiness aspect, we don't have the fear of God anymore. There is no sense of having to account to God for our behavior, our beliefs, our thoughts, all the things we used to teach. So we have now become a user-friendly kind of a church, and we don't want you feeling bad about things. We don't want you to change your life. And here's the other thing I think we've really missed it on. I think Pentecostals, Charismatics have especially been part of this. We got crusade and revival-oriented. That was our focus. And so, you know, we got guys going to Africa, and you got to have a crusade of 10,000 people or 100,000 people or whatever. And Jesus had his 10,000s and 100,000s. He had 5,000 men one day. There's probably a crowd of 25,000 people. But he spent all of his time with a handful. And it was the 12 that changed the world. It wasn't the hundreds of thousands that heard him. It was the 12. And that's what he talked about in the Great Commission was discipleship. And in the 1960s especially, we took the Great Commission and changed it from a discipleship mandate to an evangelism mandate. And right now it's all about converts and getting people to say their sinner's prayer. Well, I'll point out, I can have a parakeet memorize the sinner's prayer and say it. That doesn't mean the parakeet's a Christian. And so we got away from discipleship, and as a result, we no longer see people thinking the right way or behaving the right way because we're not discipling them. We're trying to convert them. And once they say that sinner's prayer, we report that we've got 100 new additions to the church. We've baptized 50 more. The question is, how are they living? What's their behavior? Are they producing fruit worthy of repentance, going back to Luke 2? And that's what we're not measuring anymore. And so because you get what you measure, we're contributing to the problem in the sense that we are measuring the wrong things. And here's the other thing I'll point to is, you know, why is America important from our Christian standpoint is that over the last 300 years, 85% of all resources used to reach the world for Christ have come out of America. Now, if America goes away, the church will stand, but it's going to be a lot harder for it to do what it's been doing if America goes away, because 85% in 300 years. We are now, as in world religions, Christians are 32% of professing people in the world, 21% Muslim, 14% Hindu, and 7% Buddhist. So we in 2,000 years are now at 32%, which is great. We got missionaries, and we got evangelists, and we got pastors, and they're doing all the work in the ministry, except the Bible says to teach the saints to do the work in the ministry. And here's the point I would make. Is if every Christian made it their objective that this year I am going to disciple one person and bring one person to Christ and have them thinking biblically, then at the end of this year, 64% of the world would be Christian. And if we did that again one more year, we would have the entire world Christian in only 2 years. We've been working for 2,000 years through our professionals to do convert the world, and we're 32%, and good for us, it's bigger than anybody else, but so what? If everybody discipled someone else, we could do this thing in 2 years. And so that's where I think that we have failed as charismatics, as Pentecostals, et cetera, is we're measuring the wrong things and we're using the wrong behavior. I will point to John 6, where that Jesus was all the time offending his disciples. They left him in John 6, says, this is a hard teaching, you can bear it. And he looked at the disciples and says, will you guys leave me too? No, we'll stay with you. You get the bread of life, but man, this is really hard stuff. No American church I know of today is being accused of teaching hard stuff and driving people away with disciples remaining behind to be taught more. And so I think that's part of the problem we face, and I think particularly that's a problem we face in the charismatic Pentecostal world, is there's no teaching of holiness anymore. The younger generation coming up, and I particularly speak at a lot of these seminaries and a lot of these colleges, we're not inculcating what the Bible teaches in those areas. And so that's where I would point as a real failure, is we have now created a system that is not biblical in its overall focus and approach toward evangelism, which I think is a bad word. I think discipleship is the right word. Evangelism talks more about converts and saying the sinner's prayer, whereas discipleship is, let's get involved with your daily life, let's get involved with the way you live and think, let's get involved with your family, let's get involved with your business. Let's look at how Christ applies to all of that. And that's where I think we really fail on our side.
Boy, you've given me a lot to think about, and I'm going to go back and get U-turned and even ask the question, you know, what's the material that we can use either online or in our magazine? At different times, I've beat this drum as hard as I could. I don't know. I feel like the little boy that's throwing the starfish is back in the water.
Well, Steve, let me throw a concept with you, because one of the things I'm teaching right now is two things are going on. By the nature of what we have in America, we are fixated on national news. I don't care whether it's Fox, MSNBC, CNN, whatever. Nobody is hearing what happened in my town. We're hearing what happened in D.C., what's happened to the Supreme Court, what the Attorney General has found, what was released in the report on collusion. We're hearing an inundation of national news. And I am probably one of the better connected people in the United States. I mean, it's probably 120 congressmen that I can call, that we text back and forth, that there's 1,000 state legislators I am very active with. We have in our network. You know, I know justices of the U.S. Supreme Court. I can call them. And yet, even me, when I get frustrated, I can't get the House to say, what's wrong? You guys are stupid. Do this. I can't get the White House to do what I want. I can't get the court to do what I want. And so if I can't, I know everybody else is frustrated. And they say, I can't do anything. And so what happens is they get frustrated over what they see in the national news, and they just don't do anything. And actually, the right way to do it is the way we did the American Revolution. Because we look at the American Revolution, we look at George Washington, we look at Ben Franklin, we look at national leaders, that's great, but that's not the way the Revolution was won. If you take the first four battles in the American Revolution, you take Lexington and Concord and Road to Boston, you take Bunker Hill, nobody called the national commander-in-chief and said, hey, what are we supposed to do? Are you sending us troops? They all said, no, it's ours, we got it. So the Reverend Jonas Clark in Lexington takes 70 guys from his church to go out and face 800 British. A few hours later, the Reverend William Emerson at Concord takes 300 guys and goes and faces the 800 British. And then on the road back to Boston, Reverend Payson Phillips, Reverend Benjamin Boss, they take their congregations, they go face the British. And then when you get to Bunker Hill, you got Reverend Joseph Willard, who gets two companies out of his church and goes over to fight the British. We won the revolution because everybody was willing to engage in a local fight. They weren't thinking national. Washington only stepped in where there were no local resources. So what's happened today is we think national first and local last. And we're supposed to do Jerusalem and then Judea and then Samaria and then the uttermost parts of the earth. And so our national media has focused us on national things when we should be saying, you know what, I'm going to get my school board and my mayor and my city council. And, you know, I'm in a very red state and a very red city. And the most popular sex ed curriculum used in red states is Planned Parenthood curriculum. Not in my city, they're not. And so if we got back to that local focus of, I'm going to take care of my town, and if Christians did that all across the United States, we'd have America back in a heartbeat. But as it is, they're paralyzed because I can't call President Trump. He won't take my call. And I can't call justices on the Supreme Court and say, why did you say marriage is not between a man and a woman? What were you thinking? None of us do that. And that's where we get frustrated. So our focus now is, hey, quit watching all the national stuff. I mean, you got to have President Trump. You got to have him with 100 judges. He last week was the 100th judge we put on the court. 39 of them have been Court of Appeals, more than any other president. I can tell you what's happened in the Second Court, and the Second Circuit, the Ninth Circuit, the Sixth Circuit, that they're flipping. I mean, it's good stuff, but our focus still should be on the local stuff. And if we'll win the local battles, we'll win the national battle. And that's what we're encouraging people to do, including churches, is just quit focusing on the national stuff. Yeah, get Trump reelected, but you need to go out and take the city council and the school boards and public utility district and et cetera. And that's how you get America back. So I'm sorry I interrupted what you were saying, but I think we really have got this national focus because of what we do with the media now. When the focus that won the war and that won the conflict was, I'm going to fight the battles around me and win those battles. And when we all do that, we win the national battle.
I hope you share this maybe with your own pastor, maybe with ministry leaders, maybe with people that are close friends, because we need to take this to heart. And we're going to focus on this in Charisma Magazine and in some other ways. And I just felt it was important enough to focus an entire podcast and newsletter on the need for preaching holy living, not holiness like a bunch of do's and don'ts. When I was a kid, it was considered worldly for women to even wear lipstick. And I could go on from there. Thankfully, we've kind of moved on from that. But there isn't much preaching about holy living, and we need to get back to that. We need to emphasize our people standing up for Christian principles in our society and not just being so interested in what's going on in the four walls of our church that we don't really be salt and light to the culture. Thank you for listening to the Strang Report. I'm Stephen Strang. God bless you.
Thank you for listening to The Strang Report with Steve Strang. To read more from Steve, visit his blog, The Strang Report, on charismamag.com. Again, it's The Strang Report on charismamag.com.
This has been a production of the Charisma Podcast Network. Steve and Joyce Strang are the founders and owners of CPN. Dr. Steve Green is the executive producer of the Charisma Podcast Network. We intend to honor God with every podcast and remain thankful to our advertisers and supporters who make these podcasts possible.